You're back with Marco on Astro Talk on CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome. This is Marco, and I'm here for another edition of Astro Talk. Welcome. I think it's Thursday today. I'm on holiday, so I don't know what day it is anymore. I think it's the 11th, so on 16th, I'll be in Washington State. I'll be at the LIGO Observatory, the same place where they detected the gravitational waves for the first time in our history. The gravitational waves come from two black holes that were merging. Each black hole was something like 30 solar masses, so they're smaller black holes, not the gargantuan type black holes that are at the center of galaxies like ours. I think the black hole there weighs something like 4.6 million suns, solar masses. So these were smaller, but they're still amazingly huge. Imagine two black holes that are about 30 solar masses each. One was, I think, was about 34 and one was 29. And they collided, and when they collided, they gave off gravitational waves. So the LIGO Observatory in Richland, Washington, detected them. So I'm going to be there on Tuesday morning. So next Tuesday from 8 to 12, I will be toured around by a scientist. His name is Dr. Michael Landry. So he's going to be my host. They're going to pick me up in Richland. I'm going to be at a hotel there. And I'm going to be driven into the site. And he told me the reason they do that is because anything like cars, any noise could set off the gravitational wave detector. So what they did is they built the facility about 25 miles outside of Richland, Washington. That's about 40 kilometers for you people that like the metric system. And I'm going to be there. I'm going to get in there maybe about 8 o'clock. I think a student's going to pick me up, and then there's a host of questions I'm going to ask Dr. Michael Landry. And he also said I can talk with a lot of other scientists there. So here's an example of some of the questions I might be asking. The first binary black hole detection on September 14th, 2015. The second binary black hole detection on December 26th, 2015. The 2 sigma probable binary black hole detection on October 12th, 2015. And then I might be asking questions like, what is so advanced about advanced LIGO compared to the initial LIGO? So they updated it. And if they did not update it, then they could not have detected the gravitational waves they did. Another question might be, what is the status of improvements in advanced LIGO? What are the plans for the second observation run 02? What is the status of LIGO India? So they're building one there. And what is the status of the World Network, including Virgo Kagra? And what are the prospects for other types of detections? E.g., or for example, binary neutron stars, supernova, and pulsars. So I'm going to be there the 16th. So I'm going to be there for, hopefully, 4 hours. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So you get there from Seattle. First you go to Seattle, then you take a highway southeast, and 4.5 hours later, you're in Richland, Washington. So I'm going to be sitting in there and the state-of-the-art facility. I think Professor Kip Thorne was the one that was here at UBC. He was in this. He was one of the main guys in the design of the LIGO. So it's going to be an exciting time. And I might not be back right away to give you the shows because I'm going to go on a holiday. But when I do get back, I'm going to have a lot of good stuff. So what I've been doing too, I've been looking lately at something called the Astrophysical Journal Letters. So it's a website where they have Astrophysical Journal Letters. Makes sense, doesn't it? They have a lot of research and a lot of topics there. I was looking for some stuff today, and I think you have to join. So because some of the stuff was free, and when I was looking at the free stuff, they are actually very long, so they have to be vetted. I'm going to have to vet some. I have to go through them. I can't just read from them because they're pages and pages and pages long, and some of them are very technical. So I'm going to try to get some of the good ones. And what I really want is to learn about the atmosphere of Titan, because it's an interesting object of study, and scientists do believe that the atmosphere of Titan, the second largest moon in our solar system, and Titan is the largest moon in the Saturn system. It has a thick atmosphere, and with the Cassini spacecraft there, it has studied a lot about Titan's atmosphere. And when we had Trina Ray, she's from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in the California Institute of Technology, I interviewed her earlier in the year, and we had a fascinating talk about what's Titan doing. So I'm going to get her on the show too, but it's going to be a little while because, as I said, I'm going to go down to LIGO, and then I'm going to take a little bit of a holiday. So today I wanted to talk about the Astrophysical Journal letters, and specifically I was looking for an article on Titan. For some reason, I've been fascinated by Titan. Titan, the moon on Saturn, it has hydrocarbon lakes and rivers and mountains and all kinds of features. And its atmosphere is, I think, the greater percentage of its atmosphere is nitrogen, just like the Earth's. So it's similar to Earth, and it was much more similar to a young Earth. So when the Earth was very young in its early development, scientists believe it could have been like Titan is now. So we'll see if we can find lakes. But there is flowing liquids there, but it is still very cold, like minus 250 degrees. And we will learn more about Titan today, too, because for some reason, I've been stuck on Titan. I also have an article on dated August 9th, and it reads The Infrared Saturn Cloud. So I'm going to read about that. But first, let's talk about Titan. So this is an article on www.nasa.gov. It's dated August 10th. So August 10th is yesterday, so it's a very current article. It says Cassini finds flooded canyons on Titan. So it has a nice picture, and it has actually moving dots going around the picture to show where the spacecraft made its science, did its work on. So again, it's August 10th on NASA.gov, and it's called Cassini Finds Flooded Canyons on Titan. So Cassini is the spacecraft that is in orbit around Titan. It, I think, had an original mission date of about 5 years, but you know how NASA is. It always finds ways to extend missions. So I believe it landed in the Saturn system something like 2006, and it's still growing strong. So it will make its final flight in 2017, where the spacecraft will dive in between the rings of Saturn and Saturn itself, and then it will crash land on the surface of Saturn. And again, who can say Saturn has a surface, because it is a gas giant. So anyway, I'm going to read from the article now. There's a nice photo there, and this is amazing because here we have a spacecraft really far away. Takes like 6 years or something to get there, 5 years, maybe more, and it's transmitting pictures to us. So it's a beautiful brown the surface of Titan, which I think is solid. And again, if it's solid ice, it's so cold, like minus 250 degrees Celsius, that it would be like rock. It's so hard because that is really cold. So I do believe there's five types of ice. So in the photo, it shows a brown surface, brown ground, with some kind of liquid. And I think the liquid is some kind of hydrocarbon. It could be methane. I'm not sure. It doesn't say. It just said liquid hydrocarbons. So this shows a photo, and it says NASA's Cassini spacecraft pinged the surface. So it pinged it with microwaves. It hit the surface with microwaves. And when the microwaves bounce back, the spacecraft can detect from the bounce back. For example, if we shoot radar on the surface into the ocean, and the signals come back, the way the signals come back, the time they take to come back, things like that, scientists can tell a lot about the surface. And So this one, the NASA's Cassini spacecraft pinged the surface of Titan with microwaves, finding that some channels are deep, steep-sided canyons filled with liquid hydrocarbons. One such feature is Vid Flumina. I'm going to have to somehow look up these names. How do they get these names? They're very interesting names. Vid Flumina, that's V-I-D-F-L-U-M-I-N-A, the branching network of narrow lines in the upper left quadrant of the image. So there's a bunch of narrow lines. So here goes the article. I'm going to read from the article now. NASA's Cassini spacecraft has found deep, steep-sided canyons on Saturn's moon Titan that are flooded with liquid hydrocarbon. So it shows the surface here. It's quite a varied surface. So when they send the microwaves down and they ping off, the amount of time it takes to travel and then reach back to the spacecraft, they can tell the difference in height or depth of what they are looking at. So NASA's Cassini spacecraft has found deep, steep-sided canyons on Saturn moon's Titan that are filled with liquid hydrocarbons. The finding represents the first direct evidence of the presence of liquid-filled channels on Titan, as well as the first observation of canyons hundreds of meters deep. So what I think what has happening with our spacecraft, so this is the New Horizons spacecraft, the Cassini and the New Horizons spacecraft that went to Pluto, they are finding canyons that are deeper and steeper and longer than the Grand Canyon. And these are smaller planets or moons. So that's quite an interesting find. A new paper in the journal Geophysical Research Letters. So I was looking today at Astrophysical Research Letters. Now there's a journal called Geophysical Research Letters. So as I said earlier, I will start scanning those, but some of them are lengthy. They're quite technical, their terms. So it might take a little time to vet them out. So here we go, back to the article. A new paper in the journal Geophysical Research Letters describes how scientists analyzed Cassini data from a close pass the spacecraft made over Titan in May 2013. So this is something that happened in May 2013. And when these spacecrafts go to these places, sometimes it takes a while to send the data back, and then it takes quite a while to not just analyze, but to confirm and verify your research or your finds. So this is from a pass that the spacecraft made in May 2013, about 3 years ago. During the flyby, Cassini's radar instrument focused on channels that branch out from the large northern sea, Ligeia Mare. So that's L-I-G-E-I-A, Ligeia Mare. Interesting. The Cassini observations revealed that the channels, in particular a network of them called Vid Flumina, are narrow canyons, generally less than half a mile, a bit less than a kilometer wide, with slopes steeper than 40 degrees. So it looks like these are not bigger than the Grand Canyons. The canyons are also quite deep. Those measured are 790 to 1,870 feet, or 240 meters to 570 meters from top to bottom. The branching channels appear in dark in radar images, much like Titan's methane-rich seas. So now we have seas, we have lakes, we have canyons. It's very interesting stuff. Cassini's radar is often used as an imager, providing a window to peer through the dense haze that surrounds Titan to reveal the surface below. But during this pass, the radar was an altimeter, sending pings of radio waves to the moon's surface to measure the height of features there. So I suppose what happens is if they send a ping of a radio wave or a whatever it is, a microwave, it takes a certain amount of time to get back to the spacecraft. And from this way, they can map the surface, because if they send another ping as they're moving, and then it takes a different amount of time to get back from the amount of time it takes for the ping to get back, they can determine the various heights. They can map the features. So Cassini's radar is often used as an imager, providing a window to peer through the dense haze that surrounds Titan to reveal the surface below. But during this pass, the radar was used as an altimeter, sending pings of radio waves to the moon's surface to measure the height of features there. The researchers combined the altimetry data with previous radar images of the region to make their discovery. Key to understanding the nature of the channels was the way Cassini's radar signal reflected off the bottoms of the features. The radar instrument observed a glint indicating an extremely smooth surface like that observed from Titan's hydrocarbon seas. So we can look at the glint too. The timing of the radar echoes as they bounced off the canyon's edges and floors provide a direct measure of their depths. So as the spacecraft or the moon is moving, when they send out their ping, they can measure the depth on the surface, how it changes by measuring the time differences it takes for these pings to be received. The presence of such deep cuts in the landscape indicates that whatever process created them was active for a long time or eroded down much faster than other areas on Titan's surface. So it seems like it's similar to the Grand Canyon, where flowing liquid, in this case of the Grand Canyon and Earth, it's water, but on Titan, it's hydrocarbons, things like that, different. The researchers' proposed scenarios include uplift of the terrain and changes in sea level, or perhaps both. So says Valerio Poggiali of the University of Rome, a Cassini radar team associate and lead author of the study. So I think the Cassini mission is a joint NASA and European Space Agency mission, but NASA has the main spacecraft, and I think the European Space Agency has the little spacecraft with little orbiter with some science experiment and also some equipment on it. So says Valerio Poggiali of the University of Rome, and quote, "It's likely that a combination of these forces contributed to the formation of the deep canyons, but at present it's not clear to what degree each was involved. What is clear is that any description of Titan geological evolution needs to be able to explain how the canyons got there." So that's end quote. Earthly examples of both these types of canyon carving processes are found along the Colorado River in Arizona. An example of uplift powering erosion is the Grand Canyon, where the terrain's rising altitude caused the river to cut deeply downward into the landscape over the course of several million years. For canyon formation driven by variations in water level, look to Lake Powell. Where is Lake Powell? It could be in Arizona. When the water level in the reservoir drops, it increases the river's rate of erosion. So interesting stuff. The processes that form the Grand Canyon are apparently what are forming these canyons on Saturn's moon Titan. So says Alex Hayes. Now I'm going to read another quote. So says Alex Hayes, a Cassini radar team associate at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, and quote, "Earth is warm and rocky with rivers of water, while Titan is cold and icy with rivers of methane. And yet it's remarkable that we find such similar features on both worlds." So that is true. Earth has water, it's warm, rocky. Titan is cold and icy with rivers of methane. But scientists believe the same processes that led to the formation of the Grand Canyon is leading to the formation of these canyons on the moon Titan. So again, if you want to look at this article, it's called Cassini Finds Flooded Canyons on Titan, which is dated August 10th, 2016, on www.nasa.gov. So I'm going to go on with the article. While the altimeter data also showed that the liquid in some of the canyons around Lake Mare is at sea level, the same altitude as the liquid in the sea itself. So the canyons are the same altitude as the liquid. In others, it sits 10,000 or hundreds of feet, tens of meters higher in elevation. The researchers interpret the latter to be tributaries that drain into the main channels below. So there's a variation in altitude of the canyons. That's quite interesting. Future work will extend the methods used in the study to all other channels Cassini's radar altimeter has observed on Titan. The researchers expect their continued work to produce a more comprehensive understanding, of forces that have shaped the Saturnian moon's landscape. So when I come back, I'm going to talk about the planet Saturn and its infrared clouds. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
All the hardcore stuff is just is fast, very aggressive and loud, you know, music, angry music.
I am your host, Mr. Steeston Mike. Welcome to the Flex Your Head Show on CITR 101.9 FM here in Vancouver. I'm here every Tuesday.
6 to 8 p.m.
Playing some punk and hardcore for you. If you want to hear something, feel free to give me a call at 604-822-2487 or swing by flexyourhead.net and send us an email with a request.
I seen you with your girl, sporting, in your chinchilla fur. I was laid up in the cool black shader, looking at your face just pure with no makeup. A little bit of MAC lip gloss, hair in a bun, well done. Looking for a ring, I seen none, so I hopped out the coupe and hot the soup is stopping. Introduced like I'm shining, you my destiny. In your diamond cluster, too much just to touch you.
This is Robin, the program manager at CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco, the best astronomy program on the planet.
Put it in your purse and call.
On the telephone, she heard my voice. Tell me to pick her up in my Rolls Royce. If my Rolls Royce is not the ladies, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Mercedes. If my Mercedes would have full of a disease.
My player days is over. Well, maybe not completely, but still in all. Come here, let's see a hug on my bed. And let me get between your legs.
Welcome back. That was Shine and Robin, our former program director. Hi, Robin. So anyway, now we're going to get back to more planetary stuff. I've been really interested lately in planetary stuff. I was never that interested before, but there's so many missions that are going on that are revealing such marvelous, amazing science. I was always an astrophysicist, or that's what I like to do, but now I'm getting into the planetary stuff, which is good, because in astronomy, it's unlimited. There's a universe of knowledge out there waiting to be discovered. So I'm going to get to, it's still with the Cassini spacecraft, and it's still in the Saturn system, and pretty soon we'll be getting results from the Juno spacecraft that is now in Jupiter system, so we look forward to that. So this article is dated August 9th, 2016, and the title is Infrared Saturn Cloud. So there's a beautiful picture of Saturn. It's bluey, it's kind of gray, it's whitish, but it's gorgeous, as like Saturn always is. And what it says is, this false color view from NASA's Cassini spacecraft shows clouds in Saturn's northern hemisphere. The view was produced by space imaging enthusiast Kevin M. Gill, who also happens to be an engineer at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. So I'd love to go to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California Institute of Technology. As I said before, California Institute of Technology is now the number one university in the world. So hopefully I can go down there and do some interviews with some of the scientists. That's where Trina Ray comes from, so I got a connection. Anyway, this view was made using images taken by Cassini's wide-angle camera on July 20, 2016, just recently, using a combination of spectral filters sensitive to infrared light at 750 nanometers, 727 nanometers, and 619 nanometers. So I think a nano, I don't want to say it because I might be wrong, I forget, I should know it, but it's 10 to the minus 8 meters, I believe. Okay, so filters like these, which are sensitive to absorption and scattering of sunlight by methane in Saturn's atmosphere, have been used throughout Cassini's mission for determining the structure and depth of cloud features in the atmosphere. The Cassini-Huygens, that's the one, Huygens. Huygens is the space probe. So Cassini is the spacecraft, and Huygens is the probe that is part of it. And sometimes they send the probe out to do some interesting work. So the Cassini-Huygens mission is a cooperative project of NASA, the European Space Agency, and the Italian Space Energy. Not the Italian Space Energy, the Italian Space Agency. So that was a very short article. So now I'm going to look at another article. Okay, this is titled The Dewdrop of Saturn. It's May 2nd, 2016, and it's on www.nasa.gov. So again, it's called The Dewdrop of Saturn. There is a picture of Saturn, and aren't the pictures of Saturn beautiful? But here it is. The water world Enceladus appears to sit atop Saturn's rings like a drop of dew upon a leaf. So what happened is the spacecraft, it is in the Saturn system. That's the Cassini-Huygens spacecraft. And it can fly around to any angle it wants, especially with the rings. It could fly and situate itself just outside the rings with a flat face on view. So what this view is, the big Saturn, and here are the rings. So the rings are on a side view, so you can see a little black kind of darkening on it. That's the rings. And just above there, it's a little golf ball size, so beautiful, of Enceladus. So Enceladus is the moon that spouts geysers at its north pole, water geysers. So you can believe it, when it's 250 degrees and it spouts the water, that water is going to quickly turn to ice. So I'm going to continue with the article. I'm just going to start the article again. So the water world Enceladus appears here to sit atop Saturn's rings like a drop of dew upon a leaf. Even though it appears like a tiny drop before the might of the giant Saturn, Enceladus reminds us that even small worlds hold mysteries and wonders to be explored. By most prediction, prior to Cassini's arrival at Saturn, a moon the size of Enceladus, which is 313 miles across, or for you guys that like the metric system, for you people that like the metric system, I'm sorry, it's 504 kilometers across. Who would have expected to be a dead Enceladus, or sorry, they expected the moon of Enceladus to be a dead frozen world, but Enceladus displays remarkable geological activity as evidenced by the plume emanating from its southern polar regions and its global subsurface ocean. So there is a plume in the southern. I said northern. I was wrong. I'm sorry. So there's plumes of water that are spurting. I thought it was the north, but anyway, like geysers. For a closer look at individual jets that contribute to the plume, look at PIA 11688 and subsurface oceans PIA 19656. So I'll look at those later. PIA 11688 and PIA 19656. Whatever those are, I'm not sure. I'll look later. The plume, which was discovered in Cassini's images, is comprised mostly of water vapor and contains entrained dust particles. So that's a nice word, entrained. I'm not sure what it means. This view looks towards the unilluminated side of the rings from about 0.03 degrees below the ring plane. The image was taken with a Cassini spacecraft wide-angle camera on May 25th, 2015, using a spectral filter which preferentially emits wavelengths of near-infrared light centered at 720 nanometers. So again, a nanometer is 10 to the minus 8 meters. This view was obtained at a distance of approximately 930,000 miles, or 1 million miles, or 1.5 kilometers from Saturn. Image scale is 54 miles, or 87 kilometers per pixel. The Cassini mission is a cooperative venture between NASA and the European Space Agency. Now I'm going to go into another article. I'm having fun with this. I hope you are. It's dated April 18th, 2016, and it says, Y Marks the Spot. So it's a feature that shows Enceladus, this water moon of this water world of Saturn. It's a moon, but we're going to call it a world because it is a world unto itself. It's round. So a sinuous feature snakes northward from Enceladus' south pole like a giant tentacle. So it looks like a big Y. This feature, which stretches from the terminus from the terminator near center toward upper left, is actually tectonic in nature, created by stresses in Enceladus' icy shell. So when they talk about a terminator, for example, when you look at the moon, you can see the dividing line between day and night. That is called the terminator. So here on Enceladus, there's a terminator because half of it is in dark and half the moon is in light. So that's called the terminator. So the Y starts at the terminator and branches out. Geologists call features like these on Enceladus Y-shaped Y-shaped discontinuities. These are thought to arise when surface material attempts to push northward, compressing or displacing existing ice along the way. Such features are also believed to be relatively young based on their lack of impact craters, a reminder of how surprisingly geologically active Enceladus is. This view looks towards the trailing hemisphere of Enceladus. North is up. The image was taken in visible green light with the Cassini spacecraft narrow angle camera on February 15, 2016. The view was obtained at a distance of approximately 60,000 miles. Wouldn't it be wonderful to be on that spacecraft, wouldn't it? Okay, I'm going to do another one. The article is called Tilted Terminator. So again, the terminator is the divining line between dark and light on a moon or a planet. So for example, when we sometimes look at the moon, we see there's the light side and then the dark side. The line in the middle, which divides dark and night, or light and dark, that is called the terminator. So this is, no, it's not Arnold, it's the dividing line between light and dark. So this article is dated March 14th, 2016, and it is called Tilted Terminator. And there's a nice picture of the moon Enceladus with half of it in dark, half of it light, with a nice terminator there. And at the bottom of the thing, I could see that Y, the one that was talked about earlier. Now, it was visible before. So the caption under the photo says, NASA's Cassini spacecraft captured this view of Saturn's moon Enceladus that shows wrinkled planes that are remarkably youthful in appearance, being generally free of large impact craters. So there's tectonic activity on Enceladus. That means that if there were any craters, the geologically active surface, those impact craters, their history or the evidence of them would go away because the surface is moving, so it would erase them. When viewed with north pointing up, as in this image, the day-night boundary or the terminator cuts diagonally across Enceladus with Saturn approaching its northern summer solstice. The lit portion of all of Saturn's large icy moons, including Enceladus, which is 313 miles across, and Saturn itself, is now centered under northern hemispheres. This change of season, coupled with a new spacecraft trajectory, has progressively revealed new terrains compared to when Cassini arrived in 2004. And then again, there's these letters. It says CPIA06547. So I'm going to have to look at these PIAs when the southern hemisphere was more illuminated. The view looks towards the leading hemisphere of Enceladus. The image was taken in green light with a Cassini spacecraft narrow angle camera on January 14th, 2016. That must be amazing, sitting there in the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in NASA saying, now I'm going to send commands to the spacecraft and say, do this picture, capture this picture, fly here, do this with a certain wavelength of light. The view was acquired at a distance of approximately 49,000 miles from Enceladus. Image scale is 1,540 feet per pixel. So when I come back in a week, in a few weeks, I will be returning from Washington State, where I'm going to go to the Legal Observatory, and I'm going to have interviews with a lot of scientists there. I'm going to be in the Legal Observatory for, I think, 4 hours this next Tuesday. So I'm going to bring my recorder, and I'm going to be talking to a lot of scientists about a lot of cool scientists, science, and all of it's going to be centered, I guess, a lot of it's going to be centered on Einstein's gravitational theory of relativity, which he, it's his centenary, so that's 100 years ago, he predicted gravitational waves, and in Legal, they detected them for the first time. So I'll be there next Tuesday, and when I come back, I'm going to have a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. I'm going to interview a number of scientists, and so stay tuned. We're going to have fun. So thank you. I will be back in a few weeks, so in a few weeks' time, we will talk again. Bye for now. This is Marco. You have been listening to AstroTalk.
The spice is vital to space travel.